Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded September 17th, 2025. Well, the old adage, think globally, act locally, has synergized in two Canadian political contests. For the upstarts vying for leadership of the BC Greens and federal NDP, the ongoing genocide in Palestine is both global and local, and voters agree. But 2 years after the slaughter began, the Canadian establishment remains unmoved. The United Nations Commission of Inquiry declaration yesterday of the obvious has elicited little more than gas from Mark Carney's government and further disdain from the country's militarist parliament. Israel takes comfort in that and will, in spite of the UN Commission's finding and majority opinion of UN member states, continue opening the gates of hell until forcibly stopped. Canada may not be able to change that, but Canadians can end our government's collusion with the modern Holocaust. Marley is a longtime BC-based environment defender. His articles have appeared at Counterpunch for more than two decades, while his direct action in British Columbia and other places has been legendary for at least as long. He's currently watching the BC Green leadership campaign closely. Marley in the first half, and as well as Emily Lowen's challenge for the BC Green leadership, eco-socialist author, journalist, and political activist Eve Engler is contending for the federal NDP's first chair. He's managed to hurdle considerable and unprecedented obstacles just to gain a place at the NDP podium, but that race isn't won yet. Eve's Canada-wide campaign tour that will bring him to the island later this week has had a rocky start in Toronto, perhaps predictably so. Eve Engler and bringing a new message to the New Democratic Party in the second half. But first, global, becoming local, all thanks to Palestine. Welcome back to the show, Igmar.
Hey, great to be back, Chris. Beautiful day here in sunny Victoria.
Yeah, isn't it? We're both in the same city, although we're talking remotely for various reasons. Igmar, I've just read Jeremy Appel's breach article, BC Green Leadership Race Rocked by Verification Fight as Anti-Establishment Candidate Surges. It immediately brought to my mind the BC NDP party's similar move that ended an outlier candidate, Anjali Appadurai's leadership ambitions. This is Emily Lowen, the candidate you've endorsed for the BC Green Party race. Firstly, Igmar, have you seen Jeremy Appel's piece?
I haven't, but that's exactly what it reminded me, is the old guard of the NDP and Elizabeth Cull and all those people. They just could not stand that this young upstart, Anjali Appadurai, had suddenly surged the membership of the party. I actually joined the NDP back then so that I could vote for Anjali Appadurai, and she was just thrown under the bus by the most despicable sleazebag corruption that, you know, found some minor technicality in her campaign and just put her out of the race. And so EB won with no contest.
Jeremy, in the breach piece, he says there's one major difference between the Appadurai case with the NDP and this time with the BC Greens, which they would deny that that's what they're doing, and they do deny it. But they say that in this case, Lowen wasn't an outsider that sort of put her foot in the door and forced herself into the leadership race. She was actually recruited and invited to seek the leadership position.
Yeah, well, I'm sure she was, and she's been, you know, got a long track record of being a very effective activist in many capacities. And she's, as far as I can tell, been in the party for a while. I think the main issue was that, you know, she's gone out there and there's a sudden surge of memberships. I joined the Green Party after years of disgust. You know, I mean, we had to put up with the BC Liberal plant, Andrew Weaver, you know, the only BC politician that tried to kickstart the disgusting dirty oil, Northern Enbridge Gateway dirty oil project to ship dirty oil across BC, because his richest constituent, David Black of Black newspaper fame, had decided he wanted to build a refinery in Kitimat. Kitimat Clean, he called it, like with a K-L-E-E-N. And here was Andrew Weaver stumping for the Northern Gateway Pipeline, supposedly a green leader in British Columbia. I've just got nothing but contempt. And he destroyed the BC Green Party, and we've been crawling uphill ever since.
Well, and we can't forget Andrew Weaver's endorsement of robocall endorsement of Gordon Campbell, I believe it was, way back when.
Yeah, you actually managed to grab a recording of that, and it lives in infamy and has, you know, I trot that recording out every time I see anything to do with Andrew Weaver. I mean, the guy just gives me the creeps. And, you know, I mean, the subsequent iteration of the Green Party, Sonia Furstenow and Adam Olson, you know, they were nice. I actually know Adam and hung out with him. He came up to Bella Bella and I took him for a ride down to see the, you know, the abandoned Namu fish cannery, the biggest garbage heap of the, you know, relic of the industrial overfishing of the BC coast way back when. But, you know, the problem is Sonia was great. She was an effective leader. Got really nothing against her. But basically, niceness does not grow an energetic and productive Green Party. It just doesn't. And so that's why I got really stoked when I saw Emily Lowen put her hat in the ring. And so I've been, you know, working to do whatever I can to influence her campaign.
Well, the BC Greens, the ruling cohort, the cadre, had some intimation that there was foreign interference behind the Lowen campaign. Her lawyer, a fellow that you and I both know, Victoria lawyer Benjamin Isaac, he sent a letter to the party, according to this article in the Breach Media. That's at breachmedia.ca. I recommend everybody check them out. And in it, Ben says he calls the conditions of the BC Green Party cumbersome, unnecessary, discriminatory, and prejudicial. He calls them barriers that violate morally equitable decisions, participatory democracy, social justice, and respect for diversity. Now, the ongoing vote for the leadership, it's as I understand it, it's going on over a week and a bit, and we're in the middle of it right now. And what I've seen is comments saying that the process is cumbersome, it's complicated, it's technology dependent, and they've so far allowed a piddling percentage, I think somewhere in the neighborhood of half of the people that they were determining to vet and put through this process have managed to go through the salmon ladder.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is. It's like the old guard. And believe me, there is an old established guard that is at the center of the BC Green Party, a very tired and ancient old guard. All the old members, they just breezed through the voting process and got themselves on a ballot and got to vote. I was able to vote without any trouble as a new member. But apparently, you know, and Emily's been out there signing up thousands of members. Apparently, there is a complicated process, and they're getting stymied by all kinds of things. And I just want to talk about that old guard a little bit. You know, there's, you know, Jonathan Kerr, he's the old guard's favorite choice. Doctor, you know, Comox counselor, elected a couple of times, green, and all that sort of thing. But when he's got an endorsement from Adrian Carr, and you know, I'm surprised he didn't go out and get, you know, well, he seems like a nice guy. I've talked to other green friends of mine that like him quite a lot, but you know. I wouldn't. I know, like, I was once the provincial organizer for the BC Green Party back way back when. I can't remember what election it was, but I worked with the then deputy leader, Colleen McCrory, who was a very hardcore frontline activist, a real energetic go-getter, you know, and Adrian Carr was the leader of the party at the time. And, you know, I went to provincial council meetings and, you know, the Adrian Carr, Andrea Reimer power claque that controlled the party, they ruled like with an iron fist. And I found it just a brick wall. In fact, during that election, as the provincial organizer, I moved over to Vancouver and lived in a little trailer in Point Grey in somebody's backyard with a extension cord running out to run a light out there. And, you know, I found the flat iron building that was it became the party head or the campaign headquarters for four different ridings, including Betty Croswick. And, you know, I went to work every day and sat in there with Marion Croswick. And my job was to find all the candidates to run a full slate. And then I would, having identified a candidate, I'd turn it over to Colleen McCrory for vetting. And then ultimately they would be either accepted or rejected. And as it turned out, there was no candidate, no Green candidate stepped forward in Point Grey where to run against Gordon Campbell. So, you know, I was living in Point Grey and I figured, well, geez, I'd love nothing better than to run against Gordon Campbell and just make hamburger out of him. So I stepped forward and put my name in the ring and, you know, no way. I was just too radical. I would give the Green Party a bad name. And, you know, they stamped me out. They absolutely, you know, I had lots of chops. I was ready to go. And eventually they found somebody else. But, you know, just about Jonathan Kerr, you know, I listened carefully to the Green leadership debate. And I just, you know, I mean, of course, I preferred Emily Lowen, and she fulfilled all my expectations. She's incredibly smart, articulate, cheerful, energetic. You know, you can just see the energy flowing out of her. And she absolutely convincing in as far as just getting out there and making the Green Party big, you know. And there was Jonathan Kerr, just the same old tired, yeah, system guy, you know, policy wonk, due process guy, Robert's rules expert, you know. Where he just destroyed it for me was, you know, he came out and said, yeah, and we're going to have a really credible, sophisticated list of candidates. I've been finding doctors and lawyers and business professionals and all these people to fill the ranks of candidates across the province. That isn't what the Green Party needs, is more pros, more system policy wonks and all that sort of thing. We need fucking radicals. We need energetic people that are going to go out and make a hamburger out of the due process bullshit excuse for democracy we've got in this province. You know, we need Greens in there just disrupting and calling out David Eby for being the corporate lackey creep that he is. And finally, the one thing that really clinched it for me is the Gaza genocide that has been just raging all around the world. The disgusting giant Zionist genocide that's just slaughtering and killing over there is a Canadian issue. It's a Canadian issue. It's a provincial issue. No other activist effort like climate catastrophe, forestry, all these other things. We can't be piddling away with these issues when humanity is allowing the slaughter of children and Canadian bullets are going through the skulls of Palestinian children. And the only one of the Green candidates that could have the backbone to raise the Gaza issue in their platform was Emily Lowen. And it's just like David Eby. I ran into him in Fairfield during the last election campaign. He was just happened to be getting off his campaign bus when I walked by on my way to the beach, and I just shouted at him and just totally blasted him for just being an absolute coward in the face of this genocide. You know, I mean, people need to use their positions of power to call out that bullshit. And neither Jonathan Kerr or Adam Bremner Atkins could bring themselves to bring up the Gaza issue in their platform. And that leads me, that raises a big waving red flag for me, because we know that Canadian politicians, just like American politicians, are across parties bought and paid for by the Zionist lobby. And so, you know, if you've got green leadership contenders that can't bring themselves to raise the genocide issue, you just have to wonder, you know, are they doing that because they're afraid of the Israel lobby? Are they getting, I hope to hell they're not, but are they getting a cut? Are they getting some funding from there? And that's, or they've been told to shut up. I don't know. But it was just, for me, that was just a no-brainer. Vote for Emily Lowen.
The Selena Robinson scandal too, with the provincial NDP, their senior member who came out and had said some pretty odious things about Palestine and Palestinians, she was driven out. But he did it so reluctantly, and he made excuses for her, and he hasn't wavered in his support. Why the various institutions across the board in this country support still Israel is curious and amazing to me. But if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Igmar Lee. Igmar is a longtime BC-based environmental defender. He's been appearing on this program for more than 20 years now, if you can believe that, Igmar. And he's been at it in British Columbia for even longer than that, and other places too. His articles have appeared, among other places, I guess most prominently at counterpunch.org. Me and Igmar, full disclosure, we were both the culprits behind PEJ News editors way back when, that led to near disaster for everyone involved. Well, when you talk about I said in the introduction, Igmar, that there was a synergy here between the local and the global. At least that's what I was sort of reaching for. You summed it up nicely, and saying that Palestine is a Canadian issue. This is our issue. I was at a presentation a couple of days ago by Dr. Deirdre Noonan, the second one that I've attended here in Victoria, and she's a Canadian physician. Well, she's a specialist. She went to Gaza. She's been there a few times now, and she's just back after her latest sojourn there, and giving a report of what it was like. And it's pretty grim. And when you talk about the member, Kerr, the contender, Jonathan Kerr for the BC Greens now, he's a physician. And I would think that, you know, I'd be interested to know what he has to say about it. I didn't catch the debates that were a couple of days ago. You did, though. Did that come up? Did anybody on the table, I mean, not just positions put forward in writing, but did it come up as an issue of discussion during the debates?
It did not, but Emily did mention it in her closing remarks. But, you know, the other thing about that whole debate, you know, it carried off as looking like a fair and balanced and not stacked one way or another and everything. But just having Sheila Rogers in there, you know, raises a big red flag for me, because, you know, she's a lifelong CBC mouthpiece. And, you know, CBC is right in there thick and dirty as making us, as Canadians, complicit in the genocide, because, you know, anybody who has a careful look at CBC recognizes that their couching, their terminology, their soft language that they use. Like, you know, I was just reading the Times columnist today. They give out the free copy here. Otherwise, you know, it's only useful for lining parakeet cage boxes. Stuff like that. But, you know, there's an article about how the exodus out of Gaza City right now and the bombardment. And, you know, the Times columnist, it's an AP article that's just been regurgitated there. But it describes, you know, this massive exodus of a million starving people and this massive bombing campaign that's driving them out of Gaza City into smaller and smaller enclave stacked along the Egyptian border. They describe it as Israel's operations, you know, Israel's operations. I mean, even the UN has come out calling it an outright genocide. The list of credible organizations that's calling it out as a genocide is long, and there is no other counterpoint to that. You know, it's genocide. There's nothing else. And, you know, there's just, you know, I can't go out and hug a tree and start making noise about the trees, much as I love trees and my whole life I've been fighting to protect trees. And, you know, I mean, that's a whole other issue. They've got the pigs up in the Walburn beating up on protesters, as far as I can tell right now, even, you know, as we speak. But I can't divert from hugging trees anymore when humanity is accepting and allowing a genocide. That's a more important issue. You can't have Canada, Mark Carney, supplying armaments to a vicious, cruel, and heartless, cowardly military like the Zionist army that's out there slaughtering as we speak. And so, you know, I'm sorry. That's it. We got to fight that. And everybody out there should be off their ass and calling out every politician, whether it's a Green Party candidate or the corrupt and rotten David Eby regime. I mean, geez, I dislike a lot of politicians, you know, ones that I was initially felt encouragement about. But I don't think I've encountered a more despicable creep than David Eby that has gone from fairly credible activist during his times in the BC Civil Liberties Association, just turned into the worst corporate. He's worse than Horgan, you know, and that's saying a lot.
It's not just in the politicians, though. The institutions in Canada, the medical associations, the bar association, the finance. I mean, you go across the board of media. Everywhere you look, it's the corruption is the same. You wrote an open letter. Now, I've been talking about the breach.ca, which breachmedia.ca. It's an excellent source, alternative source of news. Their editor, Drew Ojajay, as he used to be known, as I recall when I interviewed him many years ago for other activists and human rights things, as I remember them. You wrote an open letter to him. He's moved over to the high seat in the Council of Canadians, and you wrote to him saying, well, what's the Council of Canadians' position on Palestine? And this is an organization you think that would quite easily, you know, be supporting Palestinian liberation and be critical of Israel, you know, by default. But did you get a response to your open letter first? And maybe you can describe what you said in it.
Well, I just asked Drew Ojajay because, first of all, I recall him. We've worked together on hardcore human rights and activist issues in the distant past. And I thought, well, this would be great if he's behind the Council of Canadians. So first I went on their website, and there's nowhere I could find where it even mentioned him as being the executive director. I've searched throughout the website, and I don't know. He's publishing stuff as the executive director of the Council of Canadians, but, you know, and I know Maude Barlow. I've spoken at her with her at events where she keynoted, but I can't see anywhere that he's on there. So and there was nothing on their website about Gaza. So I wrote to him about it, and I haven't heard anything back. So I really, I'm going to follow up. I'm going to track him down, but I find it amazing that he hasn't responded to my letter. You know, I don't know what's going on with that, but I sure hope he's not going to discredit the Council of Canadians, or that the Council of Canadians have themselves been bought by the Israel lobby. I don't know. You know, the clearest example of the power of the Zionist lobby is, you know, I think it's like Code Pink has listed off all of the American senators who have been receiving substantial dollars from AIPAC, the the Zionist lobby there. Like, we're talking some of them millions, like Biden was the single largest recipient of donations from the Israel lobby, $12 million over the course of his career. But the list of both Democrat and Republican recipients of AIPAC millions and hundreds of thousands of dollars here, there, and everywhere is long and there for all to see. That type of research has not been done, as far as I know, for Canadian politicians, but you can bet that people like, what's-his-face, House Father, and, you know, Justin Trudeau himself, and probably Mark Carney, you know, all these Zionist apologists that can't say a damn thing wrong about the genocide, that's research that needs to be done. And that, you know, we'd expect the Council of Canadians would be among those exposing those kinds of connections, you know. But yeah, I'm sure David Eby's getting a cut from the Zionist lobby, and that needs to be exposed.
Well, I wonder if it's something like that. It's so broad based. It makes me think that there's a nuclear issue here, where there's some kind of threat. The Samson option has gotten everybody scared that Israel will implode the oil fields or something to ruin the economy or some other thing if they don't get their way. Because I don't understand how nobody. I mean, it took the United Nations. It's been almost 2 years now that this horror show, this carnage, has been ongoing. The numbers are, of course, nonsense numbers of the casualties, much underestimated. And it takes the UN that long to finally say, "Hey, we think this might be a genocide." Okay, well, it is a genocide. No. I think it's a Holocaust is what I refer to this as. This is a Holocaust of epic proportions.
Exactly. Well, I mean, the UN is just another example of the failure of modern due process oriented politics. And, you know, I can say, like, when Jonathan Kerr brags about, you know, being the co-chair of the regional district and, you know, being on the COMOX council and how, you know, he's been forwarding the green message through those venues. I can see, you know, I live in the largest regional district in British Columbia, which is the Central Coast, and the hopelessness of politics at the regional district level is just unbelievable. Like, you know, I got elected to, I'm the chair of the Denny Island Airport Commission, for example. There is a $40,000 grant sitting on the table of the director of the regional district to put a new roof on our airport building. I got elected last year. That grant was specifically for putting a new roof on the building. I announced to the regional district that I was now going to proceed with getting quotes for materials to spend that $40,000, and I had on building materials to put this new roof on. I found every single professional carpenter on the island has volunteered to step forward and put in like 5 days to put that new roof on there. And, you know, a year later, there's nothing. Like, it's impossible. Like, they had to blow a bunch of money to get a hazardous materials inspector up there, and then a structural inspector to, you know, just unbelievable, the sluggish pace of due process.
Well, it's institutional inertia is what I call it. And you see it everywhere, corporate and everywhere else. Igmar, sadly, our inertia has come to its conclusion.
Yeah. Congratulations to Eve Engler, and I know he's the next guy, and I love Eve and all the power to him. I'm right behind him. I hear he was banished from the Anglican Church in Toronto from speaking there because they bowed to the Zionist lobby. So
we'll see if we've heard the last of that, and I'm going to talk to him about that. But yeah, this is his inaugural event on his tour that will bring him out here to Victoria and other places on the island next week. And the council culture is alive and well. Igmar, it's always a joy to speak with you. And we'll talk again very soon, all things being equal. Thanks a lot for coming on again, eh?
thanks for your all your hard work and activism, Chris. You're a treasure, and you are a real treasure. Love you lots. Talk to you later.
All right, then. As I say, we're going to take a brief break, and I'll be back with Eve Engler. Stay tuned. When nothing is as it's presented.
It's a bit like discovering that your favorite uncle that's taken you for walks in the park, but that he's really a serial abuser.